"There! What did I tell you?"
exclaimed the Rat in great triumph.
"Absolutely nothing whatever," replied the Mole with perfect truthfulness. "Well now," he went on, "you seem to have found another piece of domestic litter, done for and thrown away, and I suppose you're perfectly happy. Can we eat a doormat, or sleep under a doormat, or sit on a doormat and sledge home over the snow on it, you exasperating rodent?"
James Bond is a man with a lot to envy, now isn't he? He's got loads of self-confidence, a sense of fun, ease with women, an impressive sense of style, and sex appeal. And he just plain enjoys life. But there's no need to gnash your teeth with jealousy, as all that can be yours as well. You don't need a particular personal appearance, an intriguing job, or to drive an Aston Martin. His enviable attributes can be developed for yourself rather easily, once you know how. "What does Bessie say I've done?" I asked. "Jane, I don't like cavillers or questioners. Besides, there is something truly forbidding in a child taking up her elders in that manner. Be seated somewhere, and until you can speak pleasantly, remain silent."
Sean stepped forward.
"Would you like to press charges, my lord?"
"Oh, please, please," whimpered Violet. "It's my glasses. They're cracked. I couldn't see properly. You should press charges," Muriel declared. "I took my life in my hands this afternoon. She's a maniac on the road." "And that's the thanks I get for giving you a lift," fumed Violet. "I should have let you walk. I wish you had."
Clearly, Muriel's love affair with her bicycle had been short-lived.
"Where shall the child come to first, sister? To you or to us?" Sir Thomas heard with some surprise that it would be totally out of Mrs. Norris's power to take any share in the personal charge of her. He had been considering her as a particularly welcome addition at the parsonage, as a desirable companion to an aunt who had no children of her own. But he found himself wholly mistaken. Mrs. Norris was sorry to say that the little girl staying with them, at least as things then were, was quite out of the question. Poor Mr. Norris's indifferent state of health made it an impossibility. He could no more bear the noise of a child than he could fly.
"Stood up?" I said slowly. "What do you mean, stood up?"
"Promise you won't judge?" "No." Mum put her head in her hands and groaned. "It's no good. I know you will."
"I promise I won't judge. It doesn't take away anything I felt for your father. I mean, it's not as if I'm dead from the waist down."
I was shocked. "Are you telling me? Have you met someone? Have you actually..."
"No, don't tell me. I don't want to know."
"Good heavens, nothing like that. Although it could have been quite a different story tomorrow morning if..." "Oh, that's disgusting."
Somehow, I never expected my mother to ever have feelings for someone else. "Who is it? Please don't tell me it's Eric." I gave a shudder of revulsion as I imagined him picking out the lingerie for my mother.
"Ugh! With those eyebrows," Mum declared, "do you think I'm blind?"
In repose and shirtless, Michael reclined holding a book, his other arm stretched across an ivory bolster. The muscular contours and valleys of his body emphasized his strength, reminding her once again that he was a virile, masculine creature who could break her without much effort. The basement room was dimly lit. It was dank, soundproof, and far from earshot of anyone. Besides which, the woman was strapped securely into a chair in the middle of the room, her mouth taped. Nobody would hear her stifled, terrified pleas for help. Riley could feel the killer's mounting satisfaction and his eager expectancy. Everything was going exactly as he had hoped. And she could hear him calling out to her in a soft, friendly voice. "Hey, it's late. Would you like someone to walk with you?"
Riley imagined Rhea slowing to a near stop and replying with a shy laugh.
Yeah, maybe that would be a good idea.
Riley could feel the killer's exultation now as he walked toward Rhea. She could also sense him thinking, this one will do. She'll do just fine.
Charlie, are you all right?
The gardener's face, lit from below by the dim flame, looked dark and strange. Blood ran from his nose into his thick beard. One eye swelled, the slightest glint of white shining through the thick purple lids.
Sam, what are you doing here? How did you get in?
I came to help you.
How did you know I was here? How did you find me?
Sam stepped back. His face grew dim as the shadows crept across his bruises.
The headmaster said you'd run home. But I saw your injuries, Charlie. I knew that couldn't have run. Certainly not to Cairo.
When I'm lying awake, I like to think about how, in a parallel universe, my daughter lives. That there, she has chestnut hair, forget-me-not eyes, and lips like a snapdragon. How, there, we laugh and raid the raspberry patch, stain those lips red. At 3 in the morning, when the wine wears off, I think of how those lips will part when I squeeze her cheeks. Somewhere out there, it's happening, I like to think. But not here. In this universe, the one I'm too scared to leave despite all it has done to me. In this one, I left her at the bottom of a toilet bowl.